show. We like you all to know. And we're very, very thankful that you're here. The weekend leave you feeling numb, but now the week is almost done. So open up those big old hearts and open up your ears. Cause there's a special delivery, special delivery for all you special freaks and norms and nerds. Oh, there's a special delivery, special delivery, stuff that you'll be happy that you heard. Okay, I'm going to play a song from The Sound of Music, which I didn't grow up with The Sound of Music. I was, I'm a Jew, and my mom, I don't think she forbade it, but I think it was just like, oh, there's Nazis in this? No. Watch Pete's Dragon or whatever. But then, you know, I heard this song. I don't even remember. Oh, I heard it on an episode of Anthony Bourdain, May He Rest in Peace, this show. Oh, also it's springtime. And I like flowers. I think they are embodiments of dead people in my imagination, and this is a song called Edelweiss, which is about, I didn't know that this was the name of a flower, but it is, I guess, in Austria. So that's, I guess, Rodgers and Hammerstein. And this is ZZ Top. ZZ Top.
top song. But I don't think that they're that unrelated. As a Jew, I feel like my feelings about Jesus are tepid. But I feel like as a country fan, I have grown to love him. Okay, this is a song called Jesus Just Left Chicago. Chicago, headed down to New Orleans. Working one end to the other, and all points in between.
As a Catholic, I also feel tepid about Jesus.
Good.
Very much so.
Good.
Scary dude.
Yeah, well, I feel like when he's up there on the cross.
Yeah, I know. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. What is it about Easter that you like?
Oh, okay. So my dad... So my mom is Jewish, and my dad is not, was not. And I grew up going to temple, though I was not bar mitzvahed. But on Easter, my dad would sneak me to church to hear, like, Easter music. Because I guess there's a lot of hymns on Easter. I have no frame of reference, because Easter is the only time I ever went, but they sang a lot of hymns. I like that a lot.
Do you ever go to church?
No.
Oh, I've started going to church recently.
Right on.
It kind of sucks. I'm not going to lie. Church sucks. It's very boring. It's very boring. That's one part. It's kind of like... Church is like... It's like a if you had to watch your roommate's favorite Netflix series and you were just like picking up wherever he left off. And you're like, well, what's going on here? I don't know who that guy is. What's this mean? I mean, I think it's important. And I go because it makes me feel more connected to my family. Especially because my father hated church. And now I hate church. So nice. We got that going. Are you going to do anything for Easter?
I might have lunch with my niece and nephew. Mm-hmm. I think I probably will.
Are they Easter celebrators, or is,
I don't know,
is
it just like a Sunday? And no. Two.
Well, that's kind of the prime age for Easter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they like the bunny.
Yeah.
And
chocolate. Also a lot of pastels.
Chocolate. Yeah.
Chocolates, eggs. Kids yeah. love eggs.
So do adults.
Yeah. Yeah. On today's show, we have David Turner. He writes a newsletter called Penny Fractions that covers the streaming economy in music. But a lot of times he'll touch on things that are kind of like peripheral and just related to the general move of the entertainment industry to streaming and digital. We also have Mutual Benefit. They're going to be after David. But yeah, can we all welcome David to the stage? Do you want the chair?
Sure.
Okay, cool. You started writing reviews originally, and
yeah.
you switched to this beat of streaming for about 2 years now?
Mm-hmm.
What caused that switch?
What caused that switch was that, well, most places didn't want my reviews anymore. So... Well, what really started with, there was a story a couple of years ago about there being fake artists on Spotify, and I thought that seemed really cool, because, like, you know, you go to Spotify, you listen to a song, and like, oh, maybe this isn't a song made by a person, it's made by a robot. And you're like, oh, that sounds neat and normal. So I, like, followed that story for a while, and by a while, I mean, like, there were 2 weeks straight in 2017 where I did nothing but look at numbers and try to uncover what was happening. And ultimately that story got killed, but then I was like, well, this sounds really, really cool, and I like covering this niche. And also, coincidentally, that same summer, Liz Pelley, who's in the audience today, was working on a story that was in the Babbler that a lot of people liked, that was also about a similar topic of music streaming. And so from that point, it seemed like this seemed like a cool beat, and I was like, I'm gonna keep doing this.
You wrote about TikTok.
Yeah.
Pretty recently. One of the things you commented about TikTok is it seems like they are going to be reliant on the platform star a lot less than other mediums, like YouTube was very reliant on like having a few hit people, and Vine lived and died on it. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, so for TikTok, it just seems that TikTok right now, I don't use TikTok a lot, but it seems mostly just to be that, like, there are definitely famous TikTok people or TikTokers. I don't know what we're calling them now.
TikTokers.
Chill. But it seems that when I was on it, it seemed to mostly just be like a lot of like preteens and like younger just making weird goofy videos, which is really cool, but then kind of horrifying if you sort of think about it, that like this is essentially child labor you're watching, because who's making money? The people that work at TikTok, not like the people that work at TikTok, but like the executives and the shareholders of TikTok are making all this money off of child labor, which is bad and kind of weird. And we just kind of accept it as fun and normal. Like, that's how YouTube worked. That's how Vine worked. That's how essentially Twitter works. And we're like, oh yeah, I love child labor. So yeah, that's sort of, oh, sorry. What was the actual question there?
I just wanted you to elaborate on TikTok not needing a specific star.
Oh, wow. I really rambled.
Yeah. Well, no, you got to the heart of it, which is, I feel the reason why they don't want a star is because Vine and YouTube and all these other social platforms had stars that then leveraged their power over the platform. And if there's no stars, there's no power.
Absolutely. So one of my favorite stories about Vine was about, maybe it was like 4 or 5 years ago, all the biggest Viners got together and were like, hey, Vine, where, and they met with all, like, the execs at Vine. They were like, you guys got to make this change, and this change. And what did the execs at Vine do? They did, like, all execs. They did nothing. And then all those artists decided to do a worker action and leave. And do you know what happened to Vine? Oh, wait, we know what happened to Vine. It doesn't exist anymore because all those workers decided to leave. So TikTok, smartly, is like, we need less of that. We need way less of the potential worker action. So that's probably why you aren't going to see as many stories about big TikTokers, unless it fits their PR narrative for that month or week, which they probably will.
Is all posting labor?
It depends on what kind of posts. If you're posting and there's an ad next to it, that's labor. If you're just posting on Facebook, that's kind of labor. But if you're just sort of like posting on like a local politician's Twitter feed to say like, hey, don't do that, I'm not quite sure if that's labor. Maybe it is. No one's making that much money off a Twitter post, to be fair, though.
Yeah. With Instagram specifically, but Facebook is also really up there. And I guess that's the same company. It's like the same bottom line. Are the users the product or are they the consumer?
That's such a hard question. They're kind of both because this is a weird question because, I mean, essentially you're both because you're making the content. So without you making content, there's no platform. But also, without you engaging with the ads, there's also no platform. So it's kind of like I find that binary a little odd because you kind of are serving both functions, which is kind of what's the most fucked up thing about it, is that you're serving both functions. You're like you're doing the labor and also like contributing to it as well. It's, I don't know. It's a weird one. It's a weird one, to be honest.
I agree. I think the binary is a little reductive, but I think without being able to clearly parse one from the other, you really can't analyze power structures within these platforms.
You can't, which I think is sort of why I've been sort of skewing this more in my newsletter recently to like put less onus on the consumers of these platforms, because as a consumer, you don't really have any power over them.
Well, so I think the main consumer of these platforms are advertisers.
Yes.
And they're buying like demographics and data, which is ours. So, I mean, there is a consumer other than us.
Yeah, so that's sort of the... Okay, let's go into it for a second. So that's sort of the odd thing about it. Sort of like, who's has power in a platform like Facebook? Like, the advertisers have a lot of power, because if the advertisers pull out, Facebook goes, like, has emergency meetings to try to make sure the advertisers are happy. But also the workers have power, because the workers, if they don't work, there's no Facebook. I mean, it exists, but eventually it'll sort of decay and like it'll eventually crumble. But us as individuals, even though we are the persons that are consuming the advertisements and producing the content, we don't really have a lot of power in this kind of situation, which is sort of why I sort of been writing this more in my newsletter, skewing towards more responsibility being put towards the workers of these companies, because it's the workers that essentially, they're the only ones that can save us. If you work at a tech company, if any of you work at a tech company, please save us from this hell world. Because I can't do it. Even though I guess I work at a tech company now, I'm trying to.
When you say workers, who are you talking about specifically? Are you talking about developers? Are you talking about sales? Are you talking about executives? Because executives are definitely not workers.
But executives, no. Sales, yes. PR people, yes. Receptionists, yes. The people that make the devices, yes. The developers, yes. Everyone. Everyone that essentially is not an executive, you can throw a wrench in that system. Or if you're a good executive, you could also just not do the thing you're doing every day.
So, morals and ethics aside, is, I keep on calling it Musical.ly, is TikTok deciding not to invest in stars, is that sustainable? Like, is that a good idea that will help these platforms grow in the future? Or is that a bad idea?
Oh, man. I guess, like...
And when I say bad idea, I'm not talking about, like, for us. For us, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for us, it's always a bad idea. For the actual company themselves, I guess that's one of those interesting things where, like, I will just... I guess it sort of depends on, like, the broader... I'm forgetting the company that actually does own TikTok and, like, sort of their own financials. Because, like, YouTube followed this model for a while. And for a while, YouTube never made money. They never were making any money. Then eventually, after a decade plus of just having Google sort of, like float them for this time, were able to slowly make money. So if TikTok can do something like that, then yeah, sure. But I don't know. It's kind of like a weird one where it's like, none of these companies have real business models either. It's just sort of like... We get a lot of people, and then we sell a lot of ads, but ultimately those ads don't ever sell as much money as they want to for how much effort they have to put into this stuff. So
yeah, it's almost like it's an economic bubble.
A smidge. Small bubble.
I'm sure it's not, though.
It's probably a blow bubble.
Nah, we're going to be fine.
Nah, hey,
I don't want to jinx anything, but this is what I checked. I'm pretty sure...
Yeah.
Nothing bad's ever going to happen again. I think we made it. I think we're in the clear. It's going to be fine.
We're good.
Do you know anything about Jacob Sartorius?
The former Viner? Was he on Vine?
It was Vine, then Musical.ly. Well, it was Vine and then Twitter and then Musical.ly, and now he's just an actual pop star.
I'll be 1,000% honest. I have no idea of him as an actual pop star.
Oh, so this is a thing that I've been really... it started off as just a thing I was curious about, and now I think I'm just a legitimate fan. I listen to his music because I enjoy it, and it makes me feel good. I'm not proud of it, but... he was just like a goofy Vine boy,
yeah,
who has started a Twitter account that was basically like the cover of like Tiger Beat, but in the first person. It was like that type of language. It was all like, all of his tweets were like, I wanted to say hi to you, but I couldn't. And then the monkey with his hands over his eyes. All of his tweets are like that. Like they're all written first person to second person. He never tweets about current events. This has changed a little bit recently because he's hit puberty and now he's like in the Justin Bieber working out phase in his career.
I thought you were going to say he became part of the resistance.
No. Oh, that'd be great. That would be great if he just like became like full Christopher Maloney Twitter.
I want to say this would have meant that his last week was really rough.
Yeah. But the thing about him that I was really interested in is, well, on the surface, I think going from like a 10 or 11 year old doing goofy things on Vine to, I think he sold out the Sony PlayStation Theater.
Oh, wow.
In New York recently. Like he's like CAA books his tours. It's ridiculous. And like, that's interesting, but there's a bunch of people who have that career.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is interesting is he's taken that like type of adolescent boy attitude where you're saying and doing nothing and like people are able to project what they want onto it, and he's able to like translate that through Vine and Twitter and all these different platforms. And it's a thing that like I've seen happen a million times, but it's always been in the realm of like evil mastermind producer putting together a boy band, and this was like a 12-year-old boy. It's like the scene in Jurassic Park where the velociraptor is turning the doorknob and you're like, oh my god, they figured out how to do it on their own. It's like that.
Can I make one aside? Like, yeah. What's so horrifying about that scene is sort of this one thing where it's like, the velociraptor could just kill you normally, but if they can open doors, what can't they do now?
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why I got really into it is because, on one hand, the reason why he's so good at these platforms is because he's like their ideal star. He's somebody who is doing the most general fucking thing imaginable for as many people as possible. And he's able to, like, have this career. Like, I'm sure he got a manager early on who made everything happen for him.
Yep.
But originally, he was just, like, dicking around. And he was able to take this platform and turn it into an actual career. And on one hand, I think that is inspiring that we're able to cut out the pedophile middleman from the teen sensation, like, formula.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think people like him are used to motivate other people into this narrative that these platforms give you freedom and they don't take away opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of one of the dark things about, I don't know, music as a big industry. And that essentially, like, just tells you a lot. It just sells you a big lie. It sells you, like, a big fucking lie that, like, you too can win the lottery. You can win the lottery of being like, hey, I just make some music. Then all of a sudden, I'm touring. Then all of a sudden, I'm selling out arenas. Then all of a sudden, I'm good for the rest of my life. I can just make music. And it's like, that's not how it fucking works for, like, 99.9% of artists. And then when you get, like, a child that does it, you're even more excited because it's like, oh, look, I see a small version of me. Then that means that I can also do it. It's just really, I mean, honestly, I think it's really sad. I work in music, but I find that aspect of this entire thing really disheartening. This also applies to, like, sports and essentially any specialized field that from the age of 4 to... ... you're told this is what you're supposed to do. Like, if you're over 6 feet tall, you're like, you gotta play basketball. And you're like, but why don't want? It's like, well, I'm sorry, you're 6'8", you're gonna play basketball. And it's like, but my knees. It's like, don't care. And then at, like, 21, your knees go out, and you're like, well, sorry. And you're like, well, I wish someone told me I didn't have to do this thing that destroyed my body. And that's essentially music, but with, like, your vocal cords, all the other things, mental health. Sorry, I got dark really fast.
No, it's fine. I'm there. But this is going to feel like a dumb question to ask, but I don't know how else to phrase this.
No, go.
What's the sad part of that?
The sad part of it, it doesn't have to be that way. So,
how else could it be?
Oh, I mean, so... Okay, I'll give my personal backstory than, like, the music equivalent. I come from a very middle-class black family. My mom worked at a bank. My dad's a librarian. My mom now works at a library because she lost her job in the recession. And it's, like, very, very middle-class. Very, like, work for the county. It's a very normal job. They make a decent amount of money. My mom complains about the bills every week. She's like, I hate that I spend this much money on groceries. But they're fine. Their lives are okay. Perfectly normal. That's all I ever wanted in my life. I never wanted any... Like, at one point I was younger, I thought, like, it'd be cool to be famous. I remember when I was a younger writer, I thought it'd be really cool to write for New Yorker or whatever. But...
That doesn't make you famous, I'm sorry.
It doesn't. But the funny thing is, I never dreamed that big. I never thought, like, I would be selling out stadiums or I'd be doing something where people knew my name. I never thought that would be a thing I would do because it never seemed like a thing worth aspiring to. And in music, as a person that I remember when I was, like, in high school and learning a lot about, like, just, I guess, like, seeing my friends' bands and then learning about music back in, like, I'm just going to say, just, like, learning about punk music and stuff back in the 80s and, like, the 70s. It was like, oh, yeah, this is really cool just to see, like, people who are doing stuff without this aspiration of being fucking huge. And when it seemed like those artists and a lot of those bands were still playing music and touring and weren't dead or weren't, like, just suing people constantly or weren't just, like, entirely lost, it was like, oh, it's cool that, like, insert whatever 80s band you like, whichever one. It's like, it's cool that R.E.M., okay, they got fucking huge. It's cool. Whatever other band, I love R.E.M., I'm sorry, but, like, whatever other band, like, got popular, that was, like, middling popular in the 80s, but just kept touring forever. It was like, it's cool, you could do a thing from age 25 to, like, 55. That seemed really neat to me. And that's always something that I sort of always want out of artists. I always really feel, I feel truly sad when I see an artist that essentially peaks at age, like, 19 and a half. Because it's like, that sucks. Being 19 is terrible. If you told me that, like, my life peaked at 19, I'd be like, I have 70 more years to do this shit, and I don't even get healthcare from it.
Is it the structure around them that fuels them to not want to have a sustainable career?
So it sort of depends on genre, depends on sort of the artist, always. So, I mean, like, a lot of my friends that were in bands, like, in high school, college, post-college, like, they live, I mean, they grew up the same as I did. They just were like, oh, I want to, like, try doing music for a while. It worked out for some of them more than others, but then eventually they were like, okay, I'll just go move to something else. Where, for other people, it's like, hey, you're, like, a kid growing up, and the only thing, and you happen to get, like, let's say, like, there's this kid, Enoli Chapa, who's, I think, from, like, Tennessee, I think. He's, like a teenager. And, like, over, like, a weekend or two, like, a couple weeks, like, early on the top of the year, his songs start getting millions of plays on YouTube, and all of a sudden, he gets, like, a record deal or something. And you're like, that kid's, like, 19 years old, coming out of, like, a rough neighborhood, and all of a sudden, he gets, like, a record deal worth $1 million or plus or whatever. And it's like, what do I do? Like, if I was to go to him and be like, hey, so right now, there's this man who's going to offer you $1 million. Do not listen to him. Even by giving him $1 million, you're signing your life away, and it's going to be shitty. What you could do instead is work very, very hard to just create a sustainable fan base that might actually exist beyond 5 years, and you actually might be able to have a career doing what you say you want to do, which is to make music all the time. Do you actually want to do that? Do you actually want to make music all day, every day, or maybe like 5 days out of the week? Tour? Do you want to actually do that? Because if so, I could potentially offer you something where you could do that. It's, you're not going to make as much money. Your career is going to probably roll dice. Doesn't mean it's going to be better. It could end up being that other offer was better. But at least I'll give you something where I don't feel like we're going to chew and spit you out within 18 months of your first single flops. Like, kids are never given that option. They're never told that's a thing that they have an option to do or anything like that. They're essentially told, here's the money, and then go for it. It's why, like, people point to artists like Chance the Rapper, where it's like, oh, yeah, he's, like, he, like, went independent. And it's like, yeah, he went independent because, like, his dad worked for, like, the local, like, the fucking corrupt the Chicago government, and he also had people around him with money, so he had the options to figure this shit out. Yeah. It's like a lot of people who are successful have a leg up already and can make those moves, and for artists that can't, they don't get that ability. Which, I mean, the other thing that the music industry sort of exploits the shit out of children. So, like, that's the other, like, kind of, like, dark part of it, where it's like, yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're an A&R and you're just, like, strolling through YouTube and you're like, oh, wow, that 16-year-old who just put out a song, it has, like, 50,000 plays. We should reach out to him and try to sign him. And it's like, let's think about that. It'd be sort of like if you were, like, worked at a library and, like, oh, wow, that 16-year-old, he looks like he's really good at shelving books. Let's give him a contract so he now has to work for us for the next 15 years of his life, where he gets all the money up front, and then in 5 years, it's like, oh, man, I would love to do anything else with my life. And it's like, I'm sorry, you're shelving those fucking books. Get back to work.
Is it getting worse, or is it the same? Because what you're describing is just Berry Gordy. Like, that's Motown Records for the first 20 years.
It's still the same because it's still just music. I mean, I guess it's just, I mean, it's still just capitalism, so it's still just the same shit. So it's not like nothing really new, but it's not worse. It's just kind of a bit, I guess I would like to believe it could get better because people could learn from mistakes and learn from history. But I obviously understand that we don't do that ever.
Systematically, though, what could get better?
Systematically, what could get better right now is that, like, you do have, I mean, the thing is, you had options in the past. Like, one of the things I talk about a lot, last year I read a lot about music unions. I read a lot about music unions and sort of the history of music unions in the United States. And one of the things that was really interesting was that, like, back in the 1940s, musicians struck a lot. They striked during the fucking World War II, which is kind of amazing because, do you know who was pissed? Everyone was pissed. No one liked that musicians were striking during the fucking World War II. And do you know what happened? They won. They won their strikes. They got all these benefits. They got all this great stuff. And it's like, oh, wait, what is that? So, like, what does that have to go to do back to, like, how it could be better? It's like, it could be better if musicians were better organized and they'd actually, like, were able to fight for their own labor standards and were able to improve their labor standards instead of it simply being a competitive race to the bottom with every new signing essentially being a new way to fuck over a 13-year-old. Wow, I said that really aggressively. I'm sorry, I'm feeling really
aggressive. No. I agree with you. I think it's very dark. And I think a lot of the moves that have been made lately are convincing people that they're cutting out a middleman, that the only examples they have in, like, public narratives are that middlemen are bad and that they'll rip you off. But in practice, if they met a middleman, it would probably just be, like, their friend who was helping them. And what this race to the bottom, like, the step that we're cutting out to get there faster is, like, the building community part.
Yes.
Is there anything that you think is... optimistic that's happening? Like, any steps forward?
Oh, within music?
Yeah.
Oh, within society, there are some good things. Within music, I mean, there's good music that happens.
Structurally, not
structurally.
Artistically.
Oh, artistically. Okay, sorry. I'm going to say artistically, there's always great stuff. But structurally, Bandcamp is great.
I knew it. I almost said you can't say Bandcamp.
Well, I mean, it's so hard otherwise. It's so hard. Because the thing is, most streaming services are horrific and bad.
Which is the worst one? Last question. Worst streaming service.
The worst streaming service, I feel no qualms to say this, Spotify's the worst one.
Wrong. YouTube. It's YouTube. Wait, you make an argument, I'll make an argument.
Okay, we'll go for it. Okay, so I mean, like, at least right now, my issue with Spotify is just narratively, it's the worst because it's ingrained in people's minds how music should work in 2019. That's why I would say it's the worst.
I have the same answer for YouTube. I think YouTube is narratively the worst because even though Spotify sells this idea that this is how music's going to work from here on out, YouTube, their brand association is that they are an artist-friendly platform that has helped multiple... Like, Lily Singh just got the Carson Daly spot on NBC. That's because of YouTube. People think YouTube, they think artist-friendly, and they pay fractions of the fraction of what Spotify pays. They pay the worst, and nobody suspects it, and nobody thinks twice before going to YouTube to listen to music, including myself, because I am a rube.
I will say this. You did not convince me, but that's a very good argument for it. Yeah. Because YouTube has also been around longer. They've been fighting these fights well before Spotify even existed. They've been trying to undercut prices of for artists since the beginning. So that is definitely true. I guess a lot of my issues with Spotify are just sort of like the position that exists right now in 2019 is just seemingly so omnipresent because they've just fought to try to make it appear omnipresent. And then you know what happens? It's like when they're told they have to pay more to songwriters, they're like, we don't want to do that. When
they don't have to.
Well, that's the thing. That's because artists don't have enough power to make them have to fucking do it. And then also, when they also buy, like, they buy, this is my last point, and then I will be done. It's like, when they buy a podcast company, they bought Gimlet, which is like a cool podcast company, and then Gimlet tries to unionize, and then what does the Gimlet management do? They're going to try to be fucking union busters. And what does Spotify do? Nothing. And to me, it's like, YouTube and Google have been union busters and are fucking terrible to their workers and God knows how many terrible ways. But only with Spotify, it's like, you know what? You could try to be a smidge better, but you don't even try. Like, you could try, but you don't even do it. And that's sort of why I feel more contemptuous to them, because, like, seeing people who can do something better and don't is a little more annoying to me. But also, YouTube sucks, so that's fine, too.
Yeah. David, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Doug, you want to come on up, play some more songs?
This is, I wrote this song. This is a song from the new record that I've been working on that I talk about once a month on this show. I wrote it over the summer. I was house sitting, and I got bit by I got bit by a pig. I got bit by a pig really bad. I had to go to the hospital and get stitches in my leg. And I was just sitting in this really nice house, a friend of mine's house, upstate New York. Wrote this song. It has nothing to do with any of that. Phone when I'm alone.
After things we did together, maybe it might have never, ever even happened at all. Am I losing my marble? Is it just a perfect dream I recall?
I have one more. This is a a song by the Magnetic Fields that I heard when I was really young, and then I kind of forgot about it for a really long time. And then a couple months ago, the record label Living Statues asked me to do a song for their... They did a really cool compilation of 69 love songs by 69 different people. I did my favorite song from that record. So...
around my heart like
Cool. Coming on to mutual benefit.
Remind me to tell you something about ZZ Top later. Turn on that pedal. There's like a ton of awesome stuff that was gonna happen. Thanks to Johanna for playing with me. I used to a job in my early adulthood was doing shipping for this artist in Texas, and I worked in her garage with a couple really cool people. And I was very young, and they would like teach me about bands that existed before me. I had never really heard a ZZ Top song before, and so one of them was like, there's this ZZ Top song called Legs, and the video is like really funny, and like you should definitely check it out. And we had like a cordial working relationship, and so we're like, actually YouTube I think was like pretty new, and so we're like, alright, so we're watching the video, and it's like pretty weird, like it's just close ups on female legs, and it like keeps doing these really weird angles, and like it's very gratuitous, and then we realized it was like a fetish video, like it wasn't the music video. It got pretty awkward, I guess. But the song Dougie played was really great. Yeah.
The sun is setting on this town, where rust and ivy intertwine, where past and present remain bound in all the things we leave behind. Because spirits linger, cities whisper of who we once were. Echoes all throughout this town, a past more present than it seems, with banged reminders all around of what's no longer history. Because spirits linger,
inspired by the whistling earlier. I thought I'd give it a shot. Kind of regret it. I'd like to become a good whistler, like those old crooners. You know, like.
I can't whistle.
You can't whistle at all? Do you want to learn right now? Thank you. That's the closest thing to a guitar solo I've ever done. I even did the wiggly thing with this.
What'd you do?
The wiggly thing. So I felt like there wasn't enough songs written where the insects are the protagonist. So that last song is like a pro-locust anthem. And this one, I feel like everyone's got to put a global warming song on their album at this point. So this one's mine. Again to Johanna. All right, I'm just going to do one more, and I'm going to want a joke I like to make when I'm doing a show is after a slow song I go, all right, I'm going to take it down a notch, and everyone's like, what? I'm going to end on a happy one, kind of, and I wrote this song legitimately. I really like it, but at some point, partway through the writing process, I realized it kind of, it would be really good on a car commercial. So I don't know if anyone here can make that happen. I really thought it was like a done deal. It's a very car commercial. I don't have a driver's license, but it makes me want to have one. I'm starting to be afraid it's going to be one of those things where after I pass away, it's going to be like Nick Drake, where like Pink Moon was on the Volkswagen commercial. Like, I'm afraid it might be more like that kind of story, so.
Where can people find your music?
Oh, they can find it on YouTube. the best place to find my music is on Bandcamp. Yeah. Thanks. Oh, it's, this is actually how I make money, so it's mutual benefit. At .bandcamp.com, something like that. I was going to make a joke, and then I was like, no, this is the one part I have to say. Thanks for... Yeah. Thank you.